Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, eSchool News' podcast on the latest and greatest happenings in K-12 EdTech this week. I'm Kevin Hogan, and I'm glad you found us. This week, there are a number of pieces posted to eSchool that look at recent surveys and reports that have been compiled from the past 2 years on how education is recovering from the pandemic crisis. From teacher retention to E-rate purchasing trends to state responsiveness and equity. So let's dig in. Unfortunately, not much good news when it comes to teachers. Confidence in the education profession has dropped for the second year in a row, according to the 2022 Educator Confidence Report from the learning technology company HMH. An annual barometer for how educators across the country are feeling about the state of teaching and learning, the report found that 76% of educators feel negatively about the state of the teaching profession in the U.S. The Educator Confidence Index, that's a measure of overall confidence out of 100, continues to drop, and it now sits at 40, the lowest in the report's history, down from 42.7 in 2021 and 49 in 2020. According to HMH's research, which surveyed more than 1,000 K-12 classroom teachers and 125 administrators, educator retention hinges on immediate needs more than long-term developments, including improved salary and benefits, report for educator well-being, and adequate funding for the classroom. Now, this survey was conducted between May and June in partnership with MarketCast. And the report revealed three major themes for achieving success in the future: connection, community, and customization. Now, connection, when it comes to connecting and technology, educators see strong connections between the teacher, student, classroom, and home as the top priority. 73% of educators report feeling technology is significantly more integrated into the classroom now than pre-pandemic. All right, so there's some good numbers there. And these tools to communicate between teachers and parents, and tools that deliver interactive learning activities to students, were the most favored among teachers, 63% and 57% respectively. Even more, 68% of educators said that EdTech has become essential to the classroom. There's some good there amongst the bad. Being able to have better communications with parents is certainly a step ahead than what was happening pre-pandemic. And, you know, just the fact that teachers say ed tech at all has become essential to the classroom, I think is a big burden that has been kind of overtaken now. To read more about the results in regards to the community and customization aspects, I encourage you to go up onto the news feed on the homepage and look for the article entitled "Educator Retention Hinges on These Three Things." Check it out. Next, Brian Stevens, he's the Director of Client Solutions at Funds for Learning, writes about as how schools flock to new federal funding to bring internet into their buildings. Leaders are using these funds to make sure student devices can get online, both on campus and off. He writes, "Schooling has changed in many ways in the last 2 years, but while remote learning, mask policies, and increased federal spending in education have gotten lots of attention, another trend has gone nearly unnoticed. But thanks to the availability of detailed E-rate data, this sea change is now being recognized. For years, E-rate applicants have leveraged E-rate to bring fast internet services into their organizations, cobbling together funds and seeking out providers. But today, a new trend is emerging. More funds are being requested to improve internal networks, allowing the flood of devices now used in schools and library to effectively get online. Pre-pandemic, 45% of schools reported having a computer for each student, according to the National Center for Education Statistics report, 2019-2020 school year. At least one more recent study said this figure nearly doubled to 86% as schools scrambled to give student devices to allow remote learning. He goes on, "The need for infrastructure to support all these devices is evident in the E-rate funding data. In 2018, there was a $1.5 billion gap between Category 1 and Category 2, with about 2.6 billion requested in Category 1. Category 1 funding requests decreased slightly, and Category 2 funding requests increased dramatically. The gap has been rapidly decreasing. In 2022, the expenditures for 1 and 2 categories are nearly even. So again, when it comes to the implementation of technology into schools, the pandemic did one thing. It certainly got devices into the hands of almost every student. So if you're looking for numbers to justify your own budgets for upgrading systems, be sure to dig into the details of this article. It's up on eSchool News' homepage under the title, E-Rate Spending Reveals Schools Tech Evolution. Finally, I had the pleasure to Zoom with Julia Fallon. She's the executive director of CETA about their recent report, the 2022 State EdTech Trends Report. And that's released in collaboration with Whiteboard Advisors. It draws on the results of CETA's flagship annual State EdTech Trends Survey of EdTech directors, state superintendents, chiefs of staff, and other senior state officials from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Department of Defense schools, and Northern Mariana Islands, which I admit I'm going to have to go look up. The report supplements the survey findings with interviews of leaders in a number of states to spotlight their efforts to support digital learning. Some more numbers for you to chew on here. 70% of respondents reported that the state education agency, or at least one district in the state, was the victim of a cyber attack. However, 57% of respondents report that their states provide very little funding for school cybersecurity efforts. Another data point, survey respondents emphasized the need for greater focus on the effective use of technology. More than half report that schools have a lot of EdTech programs or products, but we don't always use them effectively, while only 8 states report collecting data on EdTech use and efficiency. That is really low. Another one. States vary greatly in how they are organized to support EdTech, with only 55% of states reporting that they have a dedicated office for education technology. And although billions of dollars are spent annually on EdTech, and an investment that, as we mentioned, increased significantly during the pandemic, many states still lack a dedicated EdTech office. The names of these offices, their roles and functions, and positions within state education agency organizational structures vary greatly. Now, behind those numbers are some big picture issues that came to the forefront during the pandemic. One of them being equity. Here's what Julia had to say about that. Hands were wrung and there were discussions at in-person conferences and sessions, but it really came to the forefront, right? I mean, it really became the raw reality of the inequities within districts and within states, between the access to not only devices, but just the know-how of how to use them. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the results that we saw in the survey regarding equity.
Yeah, and what's interesting about equity, and again, it goes back to sort of the things we were working on before the pandemic that just sort of got spotlighted even more so during the pandemic, is we have always believed that technology has been a way to provide equitable access to high-quality teachers, you know, high quality learning experiences, high quality materials, regardless of where you live, right? So, and that could, technology could facilitate that sort of access for students. And during the pandemic, we could find out, you know, the hard stuff, like, you know, the physical stuff that you can touch, like this person has access, this person doesn't have access, right? Or a device, not a device. And then there was other inequities that we were finding, right? Like teachers, who has skills to actually teach in this space. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. So for us, the big things that we've also noticed, well, funding is important and funding will always have to be there. We need sustainable funding for this type of thing, is a lot of districts are small, right? They're not these large urban spaces, urban districts where they get to, but even urban districts had, they struggled too. In some ways, your rural districts and your smaller districts were better able to adapt, because they, you know, if you're in a, living in a rural area and only 2 kids don't have access, it's very easy for the superintendent to call the ISP and say, what do we need to do to get these 2 kids access, right, versus a bigger system where, you know, they may have thousands of kids. But the rural and underserved areas was really interesting. We're always going to, I think as a country, we need to be moving towards access to every single home regardless. Whether or not you have a student there, that's great. If you do, we can use it for school. But if you don't, there's telehealth and other services that can come to your door. But also, how do we collect data to then serve specific communities that might have certain criteria around access? So I live in Washington State. And we have, you know, a couple of mountain ranges in our state here. And there are valleys where we're not bringing broadband to them. There's no way that someone's going to lay that fiber for so many miles to get them. But those kind of valleys are almost the same as those valleys in West Virginia that also are struggling, that the broadband benefit may not be able to subsidize. So then how do we collect almost home access data in some ways to find out like, hey, these communities are similar, and then drive policy to help those communities specifically. So it's not this sort of shotgun approach, but we want to have connectivity to everything. And again, where states can play a role though, is with these smaller districts, is how do you help them do co-ops or work with their local, you know, with their regional service centers to provide cybersecurity services or purchasing power or, you know, a public-private partnership in terms of connectivity, a whole region could benefit. So I think for me, that was an equity kind of thing, is just trying to figure out what those are. And it's not like you should just be working on all the parts that you can.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And whatever opportunity comes, you should take advantage of those opportunities
right,
to try to solve things in certain parts.
So that about wraps it up for this episode. Again, lots of numbers there. I encourage you to go up on the eschoolnews.com and track through and grab and download as much of that as you can. It's some really effective data and information. Be sure to check back on eSchool News for all the latest and greatest news and analysis for what's happening in the K-12 EdTech space. Remember, eSchool is always free and always helping innovative educators just like you. Until next time, I'm Kevin Hogan for eSchool News.